Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm Andy Griffin. It's 908 on KDXU, and I've got the waterman, Mr. Zach Renstrom, here in the house today. Hi, Zach. How you doing, man?
It's good to be here.
It's, your name, not your name specifically, I guess, but the water stuff has been in social media, in and around, and all over social media lately. Not necessarily all of it favorable, I guess, huh?
Sure. Yeah, but that's
You're used to it, right?
Oh yeah,
you gotta have thick skin. But what's the big thing? People are is it growth? People are like getting mad because we're growing, and they blame you. I mean,
so I will. The issue with water in the West has been always an issue. In fact, I had a really good neighbor. His name is John Graff. He's probably listening, by the way.
Hi, John.
He shared a story about his great-great-grandfather that was also named John Graff, talking about how he would take his water turns, and there's a really neat story behind it, but it involves a lot of cussing, so I won't share it. But he ended up taking his water turns, and he would take a gun to go to get his water turns based on some interactions he had.
Really?
So the issues of being concerned about water, being upset about water, wanting your say with water, I mean, that's as old as can be. Like, it really has. And so we're just kind of continuing that on about what is the best way to use a very limited resource here in the desert. And so, of course, there's a lot of discussions about it. Well, of course, there's a lot of criticism. And I think that's a good thing to do. I think it's a good thing to have discussions about it and share ideas and go back and forth on it. For us, you know, we really look towards the cities to set the policy. Like, what do you want to do? There is only so much water here. So what do you guys want to do? You were elected. The people chose you to make these hard decisions. Mm-hmm. And so if you come to us and say, we want to build, 20,000 homes, then our, you know, the water district is, we're supposed to follow what our elected leaders have directed us to do. If the cities came back and said, no, we're good. We're going to take a different direction here, then we would try to adapt and follow that new policy. But yeah, it's there's a lot going on.
The funny thing though about that scenario you just pointed out is they've never come to you and said, yeah, we're good. We're not going to grow anymore. Right. They always say, we want more. We want more. We want more.
Yeah. In fact, when I first got in this job, we were looking at things and the dynamics of growth and everything. And I went to the cities, not every one in the county, but kind of the main ones here in the center part of the county of the population. Mm-hmm. And I says, we could be talking about building moratoriums in a few years. Of course, that means anybody that has any type of construction related job would be laid off, and there'd be lots of economic upheavals with that. But mm-hmm. what do you guys want to do as a city? And the clear message from all the cities uniformly was, no, we plan to continue to grow. We want to continue to grow our economy. And so we actually reached out to them and says, okay, how many lots have you guys kind of approved? Like, somewhere in that approval process, how much have you entitled? Like, where that's where the government has come and says, yes, you have the right now to build so many homes.
Right.
I was kind of blown away by the number.
Yeah.
And so we went back and says, okay, do you guys, when I say guys, the cities, is this what you're planning? They said, yes, every one of them. And so some are a little bit, want to go a little bit slower than others, but uniformly they've all come and said, yes, we have growth. So as a bureaucrat, I say, okay, you guys were elected for that. I will follow that and you know how that happens. So
do they come to you and say, we've approved this X amount of growth, go find us the water?
Yes.
Is that kind of how it works?
Yes.
Okay. Well, what do you do if go find us the water? Well, there isn't any. I mean, what do you tell them?
So what I did is I went and said, okay, with the Lake Powell pipeline, there's several issues there, so we weren't going to get any time near future. And so, I mean, it's simple math. Like, this is not like, you know, rocket scientists here. It's simple math. We only have so much water, and so how do you guys want to use it? And so we basically did two things. We said you have to lower the demand. And so our new homes that are being built have a lot lower demand than they did like 20 years ago. And the other thing is we looked out and we says, okay, we still have some sources of water we can kind of tap into and kind of bring on. But the other one is that, and we're going to start looking at something that we've done for 20 years. It's done all over the Western United States. But we're going to start sending our wastewater through a purification system so we can reuse it. And so purified reuse water.
And most people are like, yeah, if you want to reuse our wastewater to water my lawn or water my plants or whatever, yeah, that's okay. And then you get to the part, wait, you want us to drink that water?
So right now, and it's funny because there is an ick factor.
Yeah.
But 40% of the water down in Arizona is retreated. 100% of the water in Orange County. So if you've been to Disneyland, Las Vegas, Phoenix, all these places all over the Western United States, they do it already. So it's technology that's been done. Bottled water, a lot of the bottled water is actually reuse water.
Really?
Now what they do is they take it from a municipality. They do send it through some purification processes, but that water came from a sewer treatment plant and was piped directly to them. And so...
Mm-hmm. So Cascade Springs isn't a real thing.
So if you look at bottled water and it says spring water, you have to look at see where it's sourced. And so if it says spring water and stuff like that, then that is a spring. But if it says a purified water... there's a high probability, a high probability that came from a large municipality that probably is doing reuse. And so I've seen bottled water out of Las Vegas, out of Los Angeles, out of all these places that are doing reuse. And so they just take that municipal water and they do treat it. It's purified. Like they send it through reverse osmosis and do a few things to it. But yeah, so now here we won't be doing that for, it'll be past my career. Our first dive into this is we're going to do exactly what you're going to say. We're going to do some exchanges with some of the local irrigation companies and canal companies and also some of our golf courses where we'll take this purified reuse water, put it on that.
Toilet water.
for a while. and then, you know, it'll be past my career. At that point, the community will have to come and say, okay, we're ready for this next large thing. So we're kind of preparing for it, but we also prepare for lots of different options.
Okay. Now, you said big places. We're talking San Diego, Las Vegas, Orange County, L.A. They're already doing this.
Yeah, San Diego. Yeah.
Do you know how they got past that ick factor? I mean, you know, there was that phrase, that the toilet to tap phrase that was going around in headlines for a while. Yeah. Did they embark on a big PR campaign? Did they just say, too bad, it's just the way it is, or what?
So the number one thing they did is they told the engineers to stop being the marketers. And so
engineers are not marketers.
No.
I tell you. In fact, we have an engineer and a marketer right here in the room.
it's interesting because so as most people know, I'm an engineer, but I'm also an attorney.
Right.
It was the hardest thing about law school was to stop thinking like an engineer, because engineers always have an answer. They have an exact answer. And this is what it is. So, for example, you know the number pi. So most people
3.141629. Okay.
So, in the engineering world, you would be wrong, because you put the symbol pi. You don't put 3.14, because your 3.14 is not pi, because it goes on
infinity.
Yeah. So you're taught to be very exact. Well, then you get to law school, and the professor asks you a question, and you say, "Well, this is the answer," and the professor says, "Well, you're wrong." Well, I always say you're wrong, because it depends. Anyways, so
you're kind of right and kind of wrong.
Yeah. So with that, what happens, these engineers weren't doing a good job. So what they did is they brought marketers in and says, okay, we need to help the public understand. So we need to be very transparent with the public. We need to tell the public what to do. And so one of the first things that they've done in those areas is they invite the public to come and see these facilities. They just lay it all out there and say, this is exactly what we're trying to do. We're not hiding anything. We're being very open. We're being very transparent. And that was the key. That's
a bad move.
Yeah. The engineers, they're like, why does somebody want to come and, you know, see the C900 pipe pushing, you know, 200 PSI, you know, going through all that stuff, right? Where the other people would come in and say, well, here, taste it and give them a cup of it or a bottle. And so down in Los Angeles, they actually bottle this and hand it out on their tour that you can take. And so it's just like, hey, you got to be transparent. You got to tell everybody what's going to do. And so that's one of the reasons why with this, even though we might not be doing the drinking portion of it for 15, maybe even 20, 25 years, as a district, we're being very transparent and saying, hey, this is our plan. This is how we're going to lay it out. We're going to do some exchanges for 15 years at least, if not more. But eventually, this could be an option. We want to make sure everybody knows exactly what's going on and how it's done, and the process is very widely accepted. And a lot, it's actually, in a lot of ways, cleaner than the water you pull out of the environment.
By the way, did you just announce your retirement in 15 to 20 years?
Yes.
I think you just did. it seems like to me that that a lot of people need to get over the ick. And I would say I would apply that to myself even. I'm thinking, I don't want to drink toilet to tap water, right? I mean, you hear that and you go, no, that's not something I want to do. But it seems inevitable, Zach. As your population grows, like Las Vegas, like Orange County, like San Diego, you have to do something like this unless there's a gigantic river flowing through the middle, you know, like in Europe or something.
Well, even back east, they're starting to do this. But it's interesting because they may not call it reuse, but back east, what they do is a city comes, takes the water, uses the water, sends it through a treatment plant, puts it into a river, it flows down the river maybe like 5 miles, and then they suck it right back out of the river.
Same water.
And so, like, if you're in those big cities back east at kind of the bottom of the rivers, like, so I lived in Philadelphia for 2 years.
Yeah.
That water had gone through multiple municipal systems all the way through. And so, I mean, here, I mean, we have Springdale right up the river, and that water goes back to the Virgin River, and then we pull it back out of the Virgin River and put it in Sand Hollow and Quail. And so there's very, very strict rules about this water. It's heavily tested. It has to go through a purification system that is, the purification system of this rewater is so strict and so stringent. It takes years to bring these plants even online before it's allowed, which that should be the case. Like, you want to make sure you're doing it right.
So it's interesting that you're talking about the engineers versus the PR people, the promoters, because like you said, they're so used to, and you would think the truth would be enough. If I just saw it flat out, this is how it is, I would go, okay, well, at least they're being honest with me and I've got the truth. We are, though, as a society, we're used to spin doctors. We're used to people like Carrie coming in and telling us what we can and can't say and how we can say it and things like, hi, Carrie, by the way, thanks for coming. But we're used to that. We want... It's kind of sad, I think, Zach, but we want a little sugar coating, right? We don't want our pill to taste like dirt. We want our pill to taste like a little bit of sugar around, you know, and that's the truth, right?
Yeah, but I will say, and this is where I think the government has to come on. With government, we have to be absolutely 100% transparent.
Right.
And I'm good with all that. I know a marketing campaign is one thing. And so one of the things that the first thing we're talking about doing is right now we're looking at building a mini treatment plant in Leverkusen where we want, and the whole purpose of this is to bring people in and show them every treatment method, what that treatment method does, how it does this, and kind of explain it to the public, where in a lot of In private industry, you know, they don't necessarily open up for tours that much to show every single detail. And I think that's important for government to do.
So a PR plan, kind of?
Yeah, I mean, what we're going to do is first of all, it is for public education, explain it.
Yeah, we need that.
Yeah, like explain what reverse osmosis is and how it works and all the ins and outs of that. Explain how ozone works and, you know, all these things. But the other part of it is the testing is, so we'll have it there and we'll kind of test and we'll see what actually is the best treatment trains for our specific water chemistry makeup here. And that way in 15 years or in 20 years when they get ready to build it, then we'll have a much better idea. But the main goal is just to basically explain to the public what's going on so they know.
So maybe 5 years ago, we went and stayed in San Diego for a couple of days and obviously drank the tap water that went there and everything. You're saying very likely already drank some of this ick water, they're calling it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't go anywhere in the world and not experience that. Hmm. And like I said, even if you think you're drinking, the only way you could really avoid it is if you drink like Fiji water. Yeah. That is the spring water. If you only drink Fiji water, but then the ice in your cup probably came from,
Yeah, yeah. You put ice in it, and guess where the ice is from? Yeah. So, and that's interesting. I don't think people realize. So, bottled water, if it says purified, it is possibly water that was, you know, purified from not so pure.
Well, what they do is
I'm being subtle.
Yeah, but they'll take like and down in LA, they'll have a municipal connection, so that water is already meeting all the standards for culinary water, drinking water, mm-hmm. and then they usually take that water. It varies. There's a couple different processes. Sometimes they send it through a granular activated carbon filter, which is just basically a Brita filter, or they'll do reverse osmosis. And what's funny is, like, a lot of times when they go through that process, it makes the water too clean. And so then they'll add a little bit back into it. And so a lot of times they'll add...
Too clean?
Yeah. So sometimes they'll, like, add a little bit of baking soda or some other chemicals in there to give it a little bit of a taste. And also there's... Yeah. And so...
Wow.
So it's gone through the treatment method. So that bottled water, generally, not all brands, but generally is a very, very highly purified water that is safe to drink. And you can drink it with no problem whatsoever. But if you trace back that molecule where it came from, there's likely it came from somebody's shower.
My brother likes, how you do the trace your genealogy back to where my brother's always like, yeah, 13 generations ago, we were royalty. And I'm like, yeah, well, 13 generations ago, somebody flushed the water I'm drinking down a toilet. So, what do you want?
All right.
Toilet to tap, is that a phrase that should be retired forever,
yes.
though? Is that,
yeah, you're going to get the look of Carrie.
Yeah, she hates that one. Yeah.
Purified reuse water.
Isn't that just putting lipstick on a pig, though?
That's what it is. That's more transparent. Toilet to tap is not a good one because that's not true.
That's true.
That's not what's happening. Yeah. It's going through one of the most sophisticated treatment plants for water in the entire world before it's allowed. And so we purify it to a certain level. So like if we're going to put it on a golf course, it's treated to a very, very high level. But then if it goes to drinking water, then it's actually sent through even a higher treatment system. It's called an advanced water treatment plant that's very sophisticated and expensive. And so...
Yeah, you said once if we could figure out how to desalinate water, you would be very rich. If there was a cheap way to do that, you'd become a very rich person. I guess purifying water also very expensive. If you could find a cheap way to do that, you'd be very rich as well.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, the country of Israel gets 90% of their water through taking water out of the Mediterranean Sea and desalinization. But the energy that it takes to do that is extremely high. And so... Mm. Either make it more efficient, so it's cheap, you use less electricity to do that, or come up with figure out a way to produce a lot of energy very cheaply.
So you look at, I was thinking a big city like New York, 12 million people in New York City, mm-hmm. In the five boroughs, and I'm like, okay, how do you get drinking water, enough drinking water for 12 million people? Never mind shower water and toilet water, just drinking water for 12 million people. And I don't think there's any other way you could do it, right? There aren't rivers enough in the world to keep supplying people with that much drinking water unless we reuse water.
Yeah, I mean, each system's a little different. So New York's kind of a unique system. I don't know a lot about it, but I know enough that they actually get their... It was one of those things that was established a long time ago where they actually get their water from a system that's located quite far away, that's from a watershed that's kind of protected. But most cities like D.C., Atlanta, Missouri, all of them, most of them just pull it out of like the Mississippi River and treat it. And that water has been discharged multiple times already. So
from other cities and other areas that it wasn't real pure when it was put in the river.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what about, we both were Wasatch Front guys, right?
Sure.
Remember Geneva Steel right there, and they got in trouble for dumping pollution into the Utah Lake, and people could say you can now still catch a fish in Utah Lake with three eyes or whatever. I don't know if that's true or not, but what happens when a water, like a steel plant, pollutes a water to such a point where, I mean, is that water even purifiable at that point?
So... Yes. So
it is. Okay.
Yeah. If you take a drop of water that has, except for a few radiological issues, and that's getting into a whole other area of the science, but let's say it's just a contaminant. If you take that drop of water and send it through reverse osmosis, Then you take that same drop of water and you send it through a granular activated filter, and then it goes through an ozone. That drop of water coming out of that is almost straight H2O.
No matter what was in it before.
Yeah, I mean, the levels that theoretically might come through are completely undetectable. I mean, it is astronomically clean.
Wow.
To the point that it's so clean, it's almost... So then you have this water molecule that, I mean, water likes to interact with things. It likes to pick up minerals.
Yeah.
And so you have to actually be kind of, I mean, it's not crazy dangerous, but it's water that you want some stuff in your water, like minerals and stuff like that. And so that's why the bottled water, when they go through that process, that's sometimes why they add back in.
Put stuff back in. That's
crazy. And so, yeah, you just look at it and you can see it. And a lot of times, like I said, probably the most common I see is baking soda. They'll just, not a lot. It's don't, you can't really, you just enough to get a little, so it doesn't taste as flat.
Huh. It's very interesting. I like my water with a little bit of Dr. Pepper, so some carbonation in it. But
a dirty Dr. Pepper?
That's the way I go. All right, let's do a commercial break. When we come back, I want to ask you about dust. Dust in snowpack and that has to do. There was an article in Northern Utah, ABC 4 did an article about how dust makes the snow melt faster.
Sure, sure.
So we'll talk about that when we come back. Right now, let's check weather here on the Andy Griffin Show.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
It is Wednesday, I think the fourth Wednesday, right? And Zach Renstrom is in with me. Carrie's here, but she won't let me turn her microphone on. So hi, Carrie. We'll just wave. Everybody in Radioland, wave to Carrie as she's busily preparing presentations and speech. You mentioned, Zach, there is something called the AAC coming up. That's the Association of Cities, right, in the county? And you're going to do kind of a presentation to them. What's going to be the gist? What's the main topic there?
Yes. So what it is every 3 months, any city that belongs to the regional water supply agreement. And so that's most of the
pretty
cities.
Much everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't include like Enterprise or Hilldale, but the main cities kind of here where the population center is. So we get together and the mayor and their city manager are voting members of that. And so we talk about things that would affect all the cities. And so right now, a couple of things that we're talking about, the biggest one is an emergency water shortage plan.
Ooh, okay.
And that's just good planning. I mean, that's just an emergency planning that says if there's an event or if something goes on where all of a sudden we have a shortage of water.
So can you give us an example of what that might be? Like an earthquake, a dam break, something like that?
Yes. Yeah, it could be anything. I mean, that's just it. We
tornado, I guess.
I mean, it could be a cyber attack that shuts down the water treatment plant.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I mean, we take all these steps to avoid. So all our dams are designed to take an earthquake. But, you have to plan for things.
You just never know. Yeah.
And so the problem is, well, I shouldn't say the problem, but one of the things that we're discussing is, you know, there's different levels. So if like one reservoir goes offline, we have other reservoirs, but it would reduce the amount of water that the district could supply to the cities. And so we kind of look at, okay, where could that all fall into? And then we would want to take calculated steps. So like if there's an earthquake, and it's a big earthquake, you'd almost go to these draconian steps that saying, okay, the only water that's allowed is drinking water and maybe toilets. Like that's it. No, nothing else. Well, if we have a shutdown or something else that doesn't require that, what are the steps? And so right now we're working with the city saying, okay, if it's this step, we have to cut water by, let's say, 30%. What should those steps be and how should we coordinate it?
Okay.
And so it just takes time. It's a public process. It's a meeting that's open to the public. We notice it as a public meeting and all the cities get together and talk about, the best way to proceed. And it's been really good.
It's not fun to talk about emergency preparedness. Yeah. You think about your personal life, you know, okay, do you have your 72-hour kit? Yeah. Do you have food and water that will help you last in time of emergency? Even if the emergency is, you know, you lost your job or something like that. It's not fun to talk about buying insurance in case you get in a car accident or something happens to your home. But these are things that if you're smart, you will prepare for. And so that's kind of what you're talking about, right? We need to be smart just in case.
Well, and it's interesting because my mother passed away a couple months ago, and so we're in the process of cleaning out her house.
Mm-hmm.
And I hauled out tons of food storage.
Yeah.
From the 1970s.
Oh.
And so it was past any expiration date. And so my one sibling is like, oh, Mom and Dad were such idiots for spending all this money on all this food storage that was never eaten. My other sibling's like, hey, I'm grateful that mom and dad were prepared.
What if?
And yeah. And so you just escalate that to, you know, we have over 200,000 people, so you get a lot of views on it. And so we talk about it. Like, for us to buy an emergency generator, you know, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars yeah. for something we never use. Yeah. I hope we never use it, but, yeah. and so it's just all that process of, like, what's the best way? And if we have an emergency, you know, what do we want to do? You know, we could probably shut off construction water, and we'd have a savings there. Just kind of going through those steps and just talking about how the cities want to respond to those steps. The key to it, though, and this is the most important thing that we keep emphasizing, is it has to be uniform. So we can't have one city that
we're doing this and different opinions. Okay, how do you arrive at a consensus like that? Is it easy, or are they generally together?
So, I mean, there's a lot of discussion, a lot of questions, and so we've talked about this multiple times, and so we'll go through and somebody in that group will say, well, wait a second, what does that mean? What would stand during a crazy drought, a multiple generational year drought, what does that look like? And so we went back and modeled, and one of the models that came back says, okay, if these scenarios happen, so it hasn't happened in my lifetime, to be clear about that. If these scenarios happened in a certain way, Sand Hollow would be dry. Like, it might be a little mud puddle sitting there in the middle, mm-hmm. but you would have no boating. And so, you know, one of the cities like, well, that would be really bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, so how do we keep that from happening? And so we talk about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Sand Hollow, just so you know, number one state park for visitation. Number one state park.
Number one state park. Not Deer Creek or any of those up by Salt Lake or Provo, but Sand Hollow.
Yeah. For just the number of people visiting, and then for the revenue that's generated for the state parks. And so, but then they also look at the economic flow from that, because, you know, if someone wants to buy a boat or they go camp, all that other stuff. So it's actually turned into an economic engine in recreation just on that one reservoir. So if you take that offline, there would be economic repercussions from that. But
big time.
If somebody can't get water, you know, to drink, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, yeah. Did you think Sand Hollow was going to happen to Sand Hollow, that it would be so unbelievable? I mean, because you were around when Sand Hollow was created.
So the interesting thing, not so much Sand Hollow, but Quell. If you go back and you read the minutes of when Quell was built, mm-hmm. it was really like, hey, we're going to build this thing and somebody might want a water ski on it. Like, it was kind of like this...
an afterthought?
Yeah. And so, you know, quickly they're like, yeah, let's just get state parks to run it. And so when Sand Hollow came online, it was kind of the same thing. It's like, nobody's going to want to camp around this thing. It's too hot. You know, maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. They kind of kicked around, and state parks like, yeah, we'll take it. And so, yeah.
All of a sudden, look at it.
And now Number one. Yeah. And I get, yeah, a lot of people have very strong feelings because it's such... I mean, it's beautiful. Like, it's great. I take my family out there.
Yeah, Sand Hollow is amazing. I don't know anyone that hasn't been to Sand Hollow to recreate. Everyone I know has at least been there at least once.
Yeah. No, so. And the state parks, they say their biggest issue is overcrowding now on Sand Hollow, where 15 years ago, yeah, it's changed a lot.
Now you said something to me during the break, and I think I knew this, but maybe to repeat it again out loud about last winter.
Oh, sure. So in St. George, they've been keeping records for a very long time. So we have records almost to the 1890s.
Okay.
And so the winter months that are designated, it was the driest winter ever recorded in St. George history.
Ever.
Now, the spring's kind of kicked in, and so we've had a really good spring. We've had some really good storms come in. But for that winter months, driest ever recorded. And the records, we go all the way back.
Unbelievable.
So the key thing, though, is we have two reservoirs, Sand Hollow and Quell, combined. You know, they're almost 85% full. And so if it wasn't for these major infrastructure projects that were built, you know, a long time ago, like even Ivan's, we're going to be relying on Ivan's Reservoir that was built over 100 years ago.
Right.
If it wasn't for these large infrastructure projects that were multi-generational projects, we would be in a really, really scary place. But right now I can say, yeah, this summer we're going to be fine because we have these great reservoirs online. They're full.
Yesterday on The Wire and in Salt Lake, media was reporting that Governor Cox was talking about declaring a state of emergency in mm-hmm. southern Utah, in Washington County specifically, because of the drought. What would that do? What does that mean?
So for our average citizen, not a lot, to be honest. Because we're going to ask people to, of course, to be wise with their water and all those things. But right now, sure. we're not looking at any true restrictions. Where it really does affect, and the people that are going to get hit the hardest, is the farmers. And so with that declaration, it does open up certain funding mechanisms that the farmers can actually start utilizing. And I don't know all the ins and outs of those programs for farmers, but that's really kind of the key thing, is it does open up some funding for them.
But, you know, I've joked about this, but it's true. But money is not water. Money can be money. You can throw all the money at a problem if you want, but it doesn't turn into water magically.
Yeah. But what they can do is they can buy hay.
Yeah.
They can do certain things. Not a lot, but there's certain things that they could probably do to help out that process.
Do you think that, I know you can't read his mind, but do you think he will declare a state of emergency and this will happen? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We've had enough contact with the governor's office and just kind of that back and forth. And it just won't be Washington County. It'll be almost all southern Utah. So,
But for me, who lives in a subdivision over in Middleton, probably very little effect on me.
If any. Yeah.
If any. Okay.
No, I mean, there's certain, like, if something bad happened, like an earthquake, then the governor and the legislature has certain abilities to ramp, you know, say, hey, we're in a declared emergency, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But on this one, yeah, I think the average citizen. But I hope it is a message to the average citizen to think about their landscaping. Like, this is a good time, especially the spring. Make sure you have your landscaping that you do have is water efficient. You don't have a broken system. I mean, so I like to run in the morning, and it always shocks me to see the number of broken sprinkler heads.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Or, you know, our grass conversion to desert landscaping, you know, right now is an awesome time to sign up for that.
Yeah. It'll pay you back. Pay you back.
$2 a square foot.
If you're paying a pro, it probably won't pay for the whole bill, but it'll pay for a good chunk of
it.
And so, it
just kind of depends on what you put back in there. But, yeah, it helps.
In my house, I will never have to water my front lawn again, ever.
Or mow it.
That's right. Although we do have to kind of get the debris off of the artificial turf.
I just go out with, I have a little blower, and I just blow it off.
That'll work. Okay.
Twice a year, and it's good.
I went to a wedding on Saturday, and he has a backyard that is roughly the size of about half a football field, but it's all artificial turf, the whole thing. I was like,
wow,
holy
that's
smokes.
A lot.
It was a lot.
That's a lot of money, too.
I was like, this thing must have cost a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't think money's much of an object to this particular person.
Okay. So. How would it be?
We're going to take a break. When we come back, I promise we will talk about dust and snowpack and what that means together. We'll talk about that after this commercial break.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
9:49 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Zach Renstrom is with me. He is the general manager of the Washington County Water Conservancy District. That means, number one, he's the boss, and number two, he has lots of bosses. I don't know which one is worse, Zach.
If my wife was here, she'd say I only have one boss.
There's only one. Well, that reminds me of a phrase I heard. People that are well have many problems. People that are sick only have one problem.
Oh, that's
they want to get better. Yeah. You know,
we say that in the water world.
That's right.
If you have water, you have lots of problems. If you don't have water, you only have one.
There's only one. That's right. Well, one of the problems, I guess, according to this article I was reading from ABC4, by MJ Jukes. I don't know who that is. I haven't met this person. And I don't even know if MJ is, I don't think, like the Spider-Man, MJ was a girl. But anyway, dust is depleting snow runoff into the Colorado River. And a lot of people like me, I saw the headline. I'm like, what? How could dust have anything to do with snow melt?
Yeah.
And snowpack?
Actually, it has a lot.
Actually, it does.
Yeah. Hmm. So it's interesting. I actually had a class called Snow Hydrology where we talked about this for weeks.
Really?
Yeah, at the University of Utah.
Snow Hydrology.
Yeah.
Okay.
A guy named, anyways. So when you have a snowpack, to take ice and change it into water, it takes energy.
Right.
And so
usually sunlight, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of discussion about how to put energy into a snowpack to convert it from ice basically to liquid water, right? Pretty standard stuff.
Sure.
So they have sensors and all this other stuff. And one of the things that happens is white kind of reflects things.
Right.
And that's why, like, if you're skiing, if you're big-time skiing, sometimes you'll, like, get sun. Like, if it's a really sunny day, you'll get, like, sunburn underneath.
On the bottom of
your nose?
I've never had that.
Because it reflects so much. And yeah. And so.
I did not know that.
So they measure that. And so, you know, you have that photon or that light hits the snowpack. And if it's white, it reflects a lot of that right back.
So it's not getting as much energy as you might think.
Yeah, because it's getting reflected very quickly. And you can feel that. So if you also have a dark particle that's sitting on that snowpack on top.
Dirty snow.
Yeah, yeah. That particle most of the time is dark, it's black, and so that will absorb the heat.
Oh.
And so now you have a speck of dust that's warmer, and it has energy, right? Because it's warmer than the snow next to it. And so since it's hotter, it transfers that heat into whatever it's touching, which is the snowpack. And so it's a mechanism of putting more energy into the snow to cause it to melt faster.
Is this bad?
So it can be bad because a couple of things happen is first of all, the snowpack comes off faster. And so the ideal is to try to push that snowpack. If you had a wand and could wave it, you can't. But if you could hold on to that snowpack as long as you can into like July and even in August, then that just means you have a longer sustained runoff through the hotter parts of the months.
Okay.
The other thing is when the snowpack is removed, also you have a lot more vegetation kicking off. And so if you have that vegetation kicking off earlier, then those plants actually consume more water than if they had snow sitting on top of it. And so you kind of have a two thing going on is the natural environment will start sucking more water out of it. And then the snowpack comes off much, much earlier and quicker.
Wow.
And so when you get that particle on there they've done a lot of studies in this where they go to just like two fields and one, they'll take salt.
I don't know why your microphone is dying. That's weird.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
There we
came undone. All right.
Where they'll just take like black sand and put it on a field and the field right next to it. And it's almost dramatic if you look at those pictures, how much faster it comes off. And so the question is where's this dust coming from and all this other stuff about what we could do. And so, yeah, it's an issue that is studied and people are concerned about it.
And that was one of the things the article talks about is where's the dust coming from? Well, more people, more activity, mm-hmm. more cows, more whatever mm-hmm. means more dust being kicked up, right?
Yeah. And, if the area is drier too and you get more wind storms kicking on off and everything like that. So, I mean, down here, we spend a lot of time looking at our snowpack. I mean, almost every single day, I look at the snowpack to see what's going on.
Is there any left?
There's a small little bit.
Very small. Man.
In the shady areas and stuff like that. And so, but on the Colorado River as a whole, where we look at that, it used to be if you got like an average snowpack, you got an average runoff. And now we had pretty much an average snowpack, and we're only going to get maybe about 80% runoff of average. And so the question is why, and one of the reasons why is this dust issue.
Dust.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. I want to, if we can, we only have 5 minutes left, reiterate for people. I think a lot of people are panicking about, because we are in a drought. Last I looked, and you probably know this number better than I do, we're at like 2 inches of precip accumulation this year, and we're usually at 5. So we're at 40% of what we're supposed to be mm-hmm. at this time of the year. But, Zach, we're okay this year, right? I mean, that's I've asked you that 100 times.
Yeah.
This year, we have enough water in our reservoirs and everything that we're fine. If we have 2 years of this, maybe not as much.
Yeah, so this year, reservoirs, 85%, we're looking good that way. Farmers are going to take a hit. Drinking water. But if we have another winter like we had this year that was mm-hmm. just dismal, where we get essentially no runoff, then, Sand Hollow will be dry. Like, it'll just be a mud puddle. And we do have emergency contingency on that. Like, we have stored a lot of water under Sand Hollow that we tap into it. But then at that point, we have to start having more discussions. And so, we plan for drought. We plan for these scenarios. And even with our growth, we say, okay, even if we grow by all these people, we still have to have this contingency for these really, really bad years, these really dry years. And that good planning was done 20, 30 years ago. And that's why our reservoirs are full right now. And that's why we're building Chief Toker.
I was going to say, that's why you're planning for 20 or 30 years from now.
Yeah, like we have, almost 5 reservoirs that we would love to actively start building almost instantly. We are building one right now, and the other ones are in various stages of review process, but we plan to keep building them.
Will, if we have a pretty good monsoon season this year, it rains a lot in July, will that help with all this?
Oh, tremendously. Like if we miss monsoon, rains are so critical for this area. So first of all, just, it comes and gets everything wet and the demand goes down a little bit, and that's nice. But the big thing it does is it goes up into the higher elevations and saturates the soil with moisture. So then in the winter months when it comes and it snows, then that snowpack sits a lot better in the mountains. Mm. If we don't get that monsoonal season, then the soils are really dry. And so when we get snow and it starts to melt, the soil just sucks up that moisture and it doesn't come into our reservoirs. And so, yeah, it's those monsoons are critical for how we run our systems down here.
Those of who have been in St. George a while know that oft times the fireworks show does not compare to the lightning show on 4th of July and 24th of July. We usually get, not usually, we often get some pretty cool thunderstorms, and often those are accompanied with lots of rain, and that's what we're hoping for this year.
Yeah, I mean, I hate flooding. I know when we have monsoons, people do get affected by that, and hopefully nobody gets, you know, damaged from it, but they are critical to what we plan on doing and how we run our system.
By the way, I don't know if you looked at the five-day forecast. Supposedly this weekend we're going to get another storm.
Yeah, this spring's been kind of nice. We've just had a few of these storms come rolling in every, you know, couple weeks, and it's been extremely helpful. And yeah, so we can kind of just keep these storms kind of come in every couple weeks. It does help a lot.
Every little bit helps, huh?
Oh yeah, we keep track of every drop, it seems like, out there.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything we need to do now as a public to prepare for? I mean, we're in the drought. It's extreme drought. Yeah. Should we be, you know, I mean, you talked about watering, and I see the same thing. I go to work at, you know, at 5 a.m. and I see sprinklers on, and I see broken sprinkler heads and water running into the street and stuff. I mean, where are we at with watering and stuff? Should we not be watering yet, or watering lightly, or what do you think?
Yeah, just if people just followed some basic steps of just watering enough to keep the plants happy and healthy, we still have a big problem with overwatering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do have landscaping, keep it, you know, in good working order. And then look at our rebates. If you don't want to do the grass conversion to desert landscaping, we do have a program where you can get one of those smart meters.
So they are amazing.
Yeah. So if you do get these monsoonal rains, it automatically shuts off your system, because it's connected to your Wi-Fi, to your house. And it says, oh, yeah, you had this rainstorm, so we're not going to water these couple of days. And just little things like that, they start to add up to big things. And so that's what I encourage people to do right now in the spring.
I did have one, let's see if I can find it now. It went away. Okay, never mind. Somebody had asked about hard water and said, do we have pretty hard water?
Yes.
Here?
Yeah.
And it leaves deposits and stuff?
Yeah.
Is there anything anybody can do about that?
I mean, they can install a water softener. And there's lots of different kinds out there. So a lot of people do that. From a health standpoint, it's actually kind of good for you, because it has a lot of minerals in it that you need already. So it does affect how soaps interact with water. So usually harder water, the soaps aren't as efficient. And also some people complain of their skin getting dried out a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so that's where they can install like a water softener.
Why is the water hard here coming out of the tap?
Just naturally occurring elements. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, he's Zach Renstrom. He's here every month to give us the lowdown on what's happening with water in Washington County. Zach, as always, it's been a pleasure,
man. It's always fun. Thanks.
Thanks for coming in. And tomorrow, Willie Billings is going to be on the program with me here on the Andy Griffin Show. And we're going to talk about the Republican Party more, and something that he wants to do with the Republican Party. That's tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody.